In this episode, we are going to talk about the OSHA requirement that employees who are or may be exposed to toxic substances or harmful physical agents, that they be given access to their medical and exposure records. We'll talk about what those records are, define them for you, and also about the requirement that OSHA has that such records be maintained for a very long period of time, because often the symptoms of any illnesses that come from exposures may not appear for many, many years later. We'll talk about what is defined as a long period of time in this episode. So let's get to it.
Welcome to the Safety Pro Podcast, powered by iReport Source, helping you manage safety one episode at a time. With the constant regulatory and workplace culture challenges businesses face, we'll provide you with all the relevant information necessary to achieve a safer, more productive workplace. No management theories, platitudes, or guru speak, just actionable info you can use right away. Now here's your host, the Safety Pro himself, Blaine Hoffman.
All right, medical and exposure records. Sounds easy enough, but I do get a lot of questions on this. So this is going to be a quick episode, but it's going to be packed with good information that will help you better understand when to generate these records and how long you need to maintain them. Now, OSHA's requirement to maintain medical and exposure records, it applies to all employers who have employees exposed to toxic substances or what OSHA calls harmful physical agents. This includes, get this, heat, cold, radiation, repetitive motion, biological, chemical, etc. So yeah, ergonomics, you're going to be caught in this net for medical and exposure records. So keep that in mind. Where you can go to find the standard that addresses this is 29 CFR 1910.1020. All right, that's 1020. Appropriately titled Access to Employee Exposure and Medical Records. So OSHA uses certain terms that we need to talk about. So when they say access, you need to provide employees access to these records. That means the right and opportunity to examine and copy. Did you hear that part? That last part? I still talk to employers today that say, well, we provide them an opportunity to look at them in the room, but they're not allowed to leave with them. Or, well, no, the standard says they have the right and opportunity to examine and copy. They, being the employee, are also allowed to have a designated representative. Okay, now OSHA says this means any individual or organization to whom an employee gives written authorization to exercise a right of access for the purposes of access to employee exposure records and an analysis using exposure or medical records, a recognized or certified collective bargaining agent shall be treated automatically as a designated representative without regard to written employee authorization, the union. They're going to automatically, if they are part of a collective bargaining agreement and that agent acting on behalf of the employee as a part of that bargaining agreement, they automatically have access to those records as well. So keep that in mind. And of course, when we say an employee, OSHA means any current employee, any former employee, or an employee being assigned or transferred to work where there will be exposure to toxic substances or harmful physical agents. And in the case of a deceased or legally incapacitated employee, the employee's legal representative may directly exercise all the employee's rights pertaining to this OSHA requirement. So let's talk about the record itself. What does OSHA mean when they use that phrase, employee exposure record? Well, you know, simply it means a record containing any of the following kinds of information. And I had to write these down. There are four pieces, but I want to read them off to you one at a time so that I get it accurate. Environmental monitoring or measuring of a toxic substance or harmful physical agent, including personal, area, grab, wipe, or other form of sampling, as well as related collection and analytical methodologies, calculations, and other background data relevant to interpretation of the results obtained. So, if you do any kind of noise monitoring, silica sampling, indoor air quality sampling, if there is sort of, I don't know, an etch line or a clean line in a manufacturing plant using some sort of acid and you want to do some acid tests, that's all considered records that they could obtain and review and copy. The second one is biological monitoring results, which directly assess the absorption of a toxic substance or harmful physical agent by body systems. You know, the level of a chemical in the blood, urine, breath, hair, fingernails, etc. So, if you do any blood lead levels, things like that, they have access to that. All right, but this not including, by the way, results which assess the biological effect of a substance or agent, or which assess an employee's use of alcohol or drugs. You know, those are not the same. So under reasonable suspicion, and your company policy is such that you would have a, you know, breath alcohol or blood alcohol test done, that would be something that would be private, okay? So keep that in mind. Any biological monitoring would also be considered an exposure record. The third piece, and most of us are familiar with this one, safety data sheets indicating that the material may pose a hazard to human health. That's a no-brainer. We all know we should at this point. If we don't, then, you know, I need to start all over with the podcast. But we all know that safety data sheets have to be accessible and made available to employees upon request. So, look, that is actually caught in this net, right? This definition of employee exposure record. That's a record containing, you know, information relevant to an employee exposure. And the fourth piece, in the absence of any of the ones I just mentioned, a chemical inventory or any other record which reveals where and when a chemical is used and the identity, like chemical common trade name or common name or something like that, of a toxic substance or harmful physical agent. So remember, if you don't have any of the prior things listed, any kind of environmental monitoring, biological monitoring, safety data sheets, hint, hint, you should have at least the safety data sheets. But if you don't have any of those, then you have to be able to maintain this information, right? An inventory that at least lists where some of these substances would be used and has to be identified by some sort of chemical name, common name, or trade name, okay? That's an employee exposure record. Now, an employee medical record means a record concerning the health status of an employee, which is made or maintained by a physician, a nurse, or other healthcare personnel or technician. So, this includes, and I'm going to list 6 bullet points here that I'm going to read off to you that would fall under employee medical record if it includes any of the following: medical and employment questionnaires or histories. This includes job descriptions and occupational exposures to the job. So medical and employment questionnaires. So a great example of a medical questionnaire: when fit testing for respirator use, the medical evaluation questionnaire, that becomes part of an employee medical record. Just one example. Okay, the second one, the results of medical exams. That's either pre-employment, pre-assignment, periodic, or even episodic. Also, laboratory tests, including chest and other x-ray examinations taken for the purpose of establishing a baseline or detecting occupational illnesses, and all biological monitoring not defined as employee exposure record. So, an employee medical record could include any kind of pulmonary function test, if we're sticking with the example related to fit testing, right? So you have the medical evaluation questionnaire, and then maybe they're ordered to conduct a pulmonary function test and physical. before they can wear a respirator if the physician requires that, right? So that would also be considered an employee medical record. The third one, any medical opinions, diagnoses, progress notes, and recommendations. That, you know, kind of goes part and parcel to the first two. You know, there may be any notes or recommendations as a result of the questionnaire or any physical. Again, continuing with the respiratory fit testing, you have an employee fill out the medical evaluation questionnaire. The occupational healthcare provider says, hey, I want this individual to come in for a pulmonary function test because of some of the answers, and makes a note on there. So, you know, that's obviously automatically going to be part of the employee medical record. But then I go in and I do the pulmonary function test and, you know, get on the treadmill. They do a chest x-ray, things like that. All of those now become part of my medical record. Then when the physician writes an opinion, I do not want Blaine to wear a full face piece, face mask respirator, half face piece, P90, you know, filter only, I don't know, some kind of restriction, right? That opinion, that instruction is also a part of my employee medical record. I have the right to look at that and review that and even copy it. Okay, first aid records are also included in this. Also, descriptions of treatments and prescriptions. Also, any employee medical complaints. That becomes part of an employee medical record under this definition. Here's a note, okay, for employee medical records. The record, the employee medical record, does not include medical information in the form of, one, physical specimens, blood and urine samples. Obviously, we wouldn't keep those around, okay? It's gross. That's not included, right? And those are routinely discarded as part of normal medical practice. That's why. So there's no requirement to maintain a vial of blood in a Ziploc baggie in a file cabinet, okay? Just don't even worry about that. Number two, records concerning health insurance claims, if maintained separately from the employer's medical program and its records, and not accessible to the employer by employee name or other direct personal identifier like social security number, payroll number, etc. So, you know, any private, you know, health insurance claims that are not related to work. So this is work related. Three, records created solely in preparation for litigation, which are privileged from discovery under the applicable rules of procedure or evidence. Number four, records concerning voluntary employee assistant programs like alcohol, drug abuse, personal counseling programs, if they're maintained separately from the employer's medical program and its other records. So those are not included in an employee medical record. So just keep that in mind. Okay, let's move on to exposure, or when somebody is exposed to something. What does that mean according to OSHA? Well, that means an employee is subjected to a toxic substance or harmful physical agent in the course of employment through any route of entry, inhalation, ingestion, skin contact, or absorption, etc. And it includes past exposure and potential, like accidental or possible exposure. It does not include situations where the employer can demonstrate that the toxic substance or harmful physical agent is not used, handled, stored, generated, or even present in the workplace in any manner different from typical non-occupational situations. Now, a toxic substance or harmful physical agent. What are we talking about there? Well, this means any chemical substance, a biological agent like bacteria, virus, fungus, or physical stress like noise, heat, cold, vibration, repetitive motion, ionizing and non-ionizing radiation we talked about, are hypo or hyperbaric pressure, things like that, which is listed in the latest printed edition of the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. We also call that NIOSH. Their Registry of Toxic Effects of Chemical Substances. If it's listed there in the latest, remember, latest printed edition, then it's considered a toxic substance or harmful physical agent, or has yielded positive evidence of an acute or chronic health hazard in testing conducted by or known to the employer. Okay, I've had this before. I've had somebody approach me with, hey, we make this particular substance. We take raw materials, combine them, and we make this other substance. And then we use that substance to melt or mold and to make into a final product. We had our lab conduct or assemble or create a safety data sheet on that, those combined constituents, those ingredients to the final form, right? And they've identified that as potentially like a skin irritant, for example. Well, if that's known to the employer, okay, through testing or other means, that becomes a potential toxic substance or harmful physical agent. Finally, if it is the subject of a safety data sheet kept by or known to the employer indicating that the material may pose a hazard to human health. And I just gave you an example of one where the employer created it. That's, you know, known to them through their own internal testing. But in this case, we're talking if it's provided to you by, you know, a shipper, distributor, or wholesaler, or the chemical manufacturer direct when purchasing some of these physical substances or agents. All right, let's talk about what is required now that we know all of that, okay? OSHA says you have to assess the workplace, right? Assess the workplace for any toxic substance or harmful physical agent exposures that may generate medical exposure records. Remember, it's not just, you know, chemicals or biologicals. It could be environmental exposures, heat stress, cold stress, ergonomics, vibration, noise, all those things we talked about. You need to do a hazard assessment of the work environment. Keep employee medical records once you generate that record, right? So once you have a known exposure or chief complaint, you generate this record, document it, keep it for at least the duration of employment plus 30 years. So remember, I talked about, you know, what does OSHA mean by you're going to have to keep these records for a very long time? Well, that's it. For as long as they're employed, plus 30 years for the employee medical records. The third thing that's required is to keep employee exposure records for at least 30 years. Inform employees annually of the existence and location of medical and exposure records and the process and rights for accessing them. I could probably pinch a lot of companies on this last one. Inform employees annually of the existence, location, and process slash their rights for accessing medical and exposure records. When was the last time you did that? So let's talk about some FAQs real quick. I do get questions about these from time to time. When removing obsolete chemicals from the facility, does the removal date need to be documented? If yes, what is the proper procedure to do that? Now, for purposes of, you know, 29 CFR 1910.1200E, right, hazardous chemicals, you know, whenever a hazardous chemical in the workplace becomes obsolete, the employer has to do two things. Update the hazardous chemical inventory list, which should be part of the written HAZCOM program. And two, update the HAZCOM program itself as necessary. You should also remove the safety data sheet for any obsoleted chemical from your SDS stations, binders, online index, things like that. Now, there's a catch to this. In general, if it's no longer in the workplace, it's been obsoleted, you don't have any trace amounts of it anywhere, no additional, you know, chemicals in storage anywhere or anything like that, then you can do these two things. But for the purposes of the 29 CFR 1910.1020, right, medical exposure records, you have to preserve and maintain employee exposure records, which could include the safety data sheet. So that's where you would have to keep it. Even if it's been obsoleted, you would still maintain it if it was a part of a medical or exposure record. Does that make sense? In the absence of a safety data sheet, a chemical inventory, or other record that reveals where and when a toxic substance or harmful physical agent was used, of course, and its identity, is also considered an employee exposure record. So the SDS has to be kept for those chemicals currently in use according to the HAZCOM standard. But again, repeating, if a chemical or toxic substance or agent was involved in an exposure, documented exposure, you have the choice of preserving and maintaining for 30 years or more the obsoleted safety data sheet or a record concerning the identity of the hazardous chemical, where it was used, and when it was used. But I'm going to give you a pro tip, my advice. Keep them both. Keep the safety data sheet and note, you know, the identity, and especially the where it was used and when it was used, because the where it was used and when it was used is not required to be included on a safety data sheet according to the SDS requirement, right? That information's not on there. I would put that on there, okay? So that way you keep both. Because if you opt to just keep the safety data sheet without the other information, then you're not really meeting the original intent of the medical and exposure records standard. That's why I'm recommending if you opt to keep the safety data sheet, you also include the when and where information. Moving on. Hey, what about this one? What is the liability for transferring or maintaining medical records when there is no successor employer? This is a, hey, we're going out of business question. And there's no successor employer. We're done. We're shuttering the place up, and we're gone for good. Now, the Code of Federal Regulations, 29 CFR 1910.1020, the Access to Employee Exposure Medical Records, it outlines the correct process of managing employee records. And according to that, whenever an employer either is ceasing to do business and there is no successor employer to receive and maintain those records, or intends to dispose of any records required to be preserved for at least 30 years, the employer shall do one of two things. An employer must transfer the records to the director of the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, that is NIOSH. So you have to transfer those records to NIOSH. Or they must notify the director of NIOSH in writing of the impending disposal of records at least 3 months prior to the disposal of those records. I'm reading here verbatim. Now, depending on the content of the OSHA records, you may wish to share the information in them with the specific employees to whom they belong before you transfer or dispose of them. Always a good idea. All right, I wanted to get this one out of the gate because I recently got a question about, I get off and on questions about medical exposure records from time to time, but I recently got one and I said, you know what? I've been meaning to get to this topic. I'll cover it. I hope it wasn't too crazy confusing. The show notes spell it out very well for you and reference the applicable regulations. So let me know what you think. And as always, reach out to me on LinkedIn. I want to connect with you. And do me a solid. I don't do ads for the podcast or anything. This is strictly organic. The only way my audience grows is through this audience right here. You all hold the key to expanding and growing this podcast audience. If you think this podcast is value and provides a value to you, maybe it would provide a value to somebody else. I would love it. Absolutely love it if you could just share with a colleague or a friend that would be interested in learning about this stuff. Go ahead and share a link to the podcast or mention it. Send them a text right now. Mention it on LinkedIn, Twitter, maybe Instagram, wherever you hang out on social media. That would be awesome. I'll try to pick that up. If you use the hashtag SafetyPro, all one word, hashtag SafetyPro, and I'll try to pick those up. I search for that every once in a while. Or just at mention the Safety Pro podcast, if you post about it on social. I love interacting. I know many of you, I've interacted with you off and on over the last several months, going back a couple of years now for some of you, but I love interacting with you and hearing your stories. And I get a lot of listener requests, and from questions I get, I kind of spin those off into topics. So keep the interactions coming. I look forward to connecting with you on LinkedIn. And until the next Safety Pro podcast episode, as always, my friends, be safe.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Safety Pro Podcast, powered by iReport Source, the all-in-one digital safety solution. For info on how you can request a free demo on all the capabilities of iReport Source to streamline your business's safety management system, head over to thesafetypropodcast.com. We look forward to helping you manage safety on the next episode of the Safety Pro Podcast.